Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
Well, that does raise the bar kind of high for me, doesn't it? Hi, it's John. It's 107. We're here all the way.
Lord have mercy.
All the way until 3 o'clock. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in. And remember, we'd love to read your text or hear your phone call at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Poor Donald Trump. And I don't begin most shows with those three words. Poor Donald Trump. But even he must be a little self-conscious about his bizarre body language anymore. And so when he meets earlier today, French President Emmanuel Macron and the First Lady, even he must have been saying, okay, don't screw this up. Don't screw this up. Just shake their hands and relax. Just quick shake, smile, nod, relax. No viral videos this time. Just shake, smile, relax. Shake, smile. I'm shaking his hand. I'm shaking her hand. I'm shaking her hand. Shake, shake, shake. Pull, grab. Oh, no, wait. It's too late. I've got her in a vice grip. Release, release, release. Oh, crap. I screwed up bigly. Sad. I mean, you know, it's almost like a self-defeating prophecy or whatever you call that, where you say, okay, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. And you're thinking about it so much that you, in fact, do it. And so in the soon-to-be released montage of Trump handshaking videos, you're going to see Donald Trump grab, is it Brigitte or Brigitte? 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 I speak a little French, but I don't. The French pronunciation would be Brigitte. So I'm going to say it's Brigitte Macron.
I would say so too, but I'll look it up anyway, just to be safe.
Yeah, and then when we're live on the air, we won't make any mistakes. And then a soon-to-be-released video, you'll see him grabbing her right hand with his left, and he pulls her in, and then she resists and kind of backs away, and he's got with his left hand, her right hand, so they're facing each other, almost as if they were getting ready to dance, but he's pulling her in, and she's trying to back away, so then he lifts, in pulling her in, he kind of lifts her arm up, too, like, come here. Maybe as if he was almost then trying to get around to her side for a photo op. That's the gif. And everybody's talking about it again, because there's nothing else to talk about. But it's just, you know, part of the sideshow. It's just another entertaining wrinkle that the president offers us. And then they get down to substance. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy this. Kind of watch the train wreck, which was scheduled and arrived on time. He just can't help it. He doesn't know how to do this. I don't know that all of us do, right? So I'll throw him that bone. I mean, I don't know that these photo ops are always easy, but he is just such a fail at those. You almost feel sorry for him. And to be fair, when you watch the extended dance version of this video, what you're generally seeing out there is a 3-second clip. But if you have time to watch the 7-second clip, you will see that it is a little more natural. There's the, oh, are we going to bus or not? Yes, they kiss each other on the cheek. And then now what do we do? And so he's just kind of facing her. So he grabs her left hand with his right. And then what are we going to do? I've never done this before. Well, we'll get a picture taken. And so as he's trying to position them in, and if you edit that down to the 3 worst seconds that it can possibly be, that's what everybody's feeding off of today. But it's not like this is happening in a vacuum, right? I mean, he shook the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe's hand for 19 seconds, and you knew Abe only wanted about 3 or 4 of them. And Macron said, I'll double down on that, and said that was not a handshake, that was a gesture. So something is clearly going on. And I wonder who thought about it more. The president thinking, okay, now I got to, these French people, Lord knows we've exchanged words, so I've got to get this one right. Or I'll bet the people that really sort of stress about it are the recipients of a Donald Trump handshake, especially if you're somebody for whom you know he's going to try and make an imprint. I'm going to show affection, or I'm going to show domination, or I'm going to show acquiescence, whatever it is that he's trying to show. And they have to know how to play that, how to be the recipient of that, the dance partner, if you will. And so I'm sure that was her worst nightmare. She goes, oh, man, please just don't be in a video, but don't be in a viral video. I don't want to be in a viral video. Oh, no, I'm in a viral video. Doggone it. Or as they might say, sacré bleu. Zut. Which I believe is French for darn, but I can't be sure. So that's the end of the news for today. Good night, everybody. The president was then asked, and these moments are always sort of inevitable and awkward, but there they are standing at the podium. The French want to talk about the U.S.-French alliance for the past 100 years and more, and the president wants to talk about anything but what he's about to be asked about. So he was asked about his son's taking the meeting with the Russian lawyer and his support of the son. This is what the president had to say.
As far as my son is concerned, my son is a wonderful young man. He took a meeting with a Russian lawyer, not a government lawyer, but a Russian lawyer. It was a short meeting. It was a meeting that went very, very quickly, very fast. I do think this, I think from a practical standpoint, most people would have taken that meeting. It's called opposition research or even research into your opponent. That's very standard in politics. Politics is not the nicest business in the world, but it's very standard where they have information and you take the information. In the case of Don, he listened. I guess they talked about, as I see it, they talked about adoption and some things. But nothing happened from the meeting. Zero happened from the meeting. And honestly, I think the press made a very big deal over something that really a lot of people would do. Now, the lawyer that went to the meeting, I see that she was in the halls of Congress also. Somebody said that her visa or her passport to come into the country was approved by Attorney General Lynch. Now, maybe that's wrong. I just heard that a little while ago, but it's a little surprised to hear that. So she was here because of Lynch. I have a son who's a great young man. He's a fine person. He took a meeting with a lawyer from Russia. It lasted for a very short period, and nothing came of the meeting. And I think it's a meeting that most people in politics probably would have taken.
A couple of points about that. I'll get back to would most people take that meeting in a second. The Hill is reporting that she may have, in fact, been able to arrive because of a visa or passport that was approved when Lynch was the attorney general. I don't know that that's the issue. I don't know that any of us know her or this story well enough to know whether or not she should be in the United States. The bigger point is that she got into the White House, or no, the Trump Tower, for a meeting with the president-elect. And I'm still just kind of surprised that they haven't found a better defense than nothing came of the meeting. Nothing came of the meeting is quite beside the point. That is not what people are angry about. That is not what people are asking questions about the legality or the ethic of it. It is not that, because they didn't know if there was anything that was going to be revealed. They went with arms open. They, quote unquote, loved it. That's the point. But the president says something that I also think is true. Maybe you do too. Most people would have taken that meeting. Do you think that? Think of all of the people that were standing on the stage with the president when he was running for the Republican nomination. And do you think that Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders would have taken that? I don't know that the answer is universal. Not all of them yes, not all of them no. But I think most politicians today would take that meeting. Would Rahm Emanuel take that meeting? Would Bruce Rauner take that meeting? Would Mike Madigan take that meeting? Would Mike Pence take that meeting? I think most of them take that meeting. Have you seen their campaign commercials? There's nothing honest or civil about that. I think most of them take that meeting. That doesn't get Donald Jr. off the hook or the president either. It's a weak defense. It's saying we're as bad as the rest. But I think most of them take that meeting. Steve, do you agree with me on that? Most people take the meeting?
I'm not sure that I do. And I can only go by the reaction to it, and you know, most of them saying that they would have never done it. That if a foreign government comes on and says,
"Oh, Steve, you are so naive."
You asked me the question, you knucklehead.
I know, but people always accuse me of that, and I love to play that card. I don't get to do that often. This is kind of fun.
No, so you're saying if a foreign government, if an adversary said, you know, we have a lawyer here who wants to meet is part of the Russian government effort to elect your dad, I think that probably would have been a red flag, yeah.
Well, that was, as Donald Trump Jr. says, before we caught Russian fever.
Well, that's because the fever started there. I mean, right? I mean, you could make that argument. The fever didn't exist before because the cooperation didn't exist before maybe that meeting.
Does it matter to you that it wasn't really from the Russians? It was from Bob Goldstone. This Goldstone guy, who is a character from Central Casting, although I don't know what movie he's cast for. It's bizarre that he has this proximity to the future president. But
he's like a wacky neighbor in a sitcom.
You know, that's right.
Every sitcom has a wacky neighbor.
Was it you that said he's the Cato Kalin
right.
of this particular story? He's the Cato Kalin of this story. Have you seen him in any clothes that you would describe as reasonable? The correct answer is no. So this guy says it's from, this is in support of the Russian support of the president.
But wasn't he an attorney for an oligarch there, and he was influential in the...
I don't know if he's an attorney. He did public relations for the oligarch and his pop star son.
Okay, it's getting confusing to me. I thought he was for...
Well, maybe he is, but I mean, his connection to them is through the Miss Universe pageant and stuff like that.
Right.
That's how he has this entree.
I'm just saying you can't judge... Soviet spy by his muumuu? I don't know.
I have seen him in muumuus, silk shirts that have elaborate embroidery that he wears kind of like a skirt. It's really bizarre, some of the clothes this guy has on. But I guess that's a distraction, too. Is this Dmitria on line one? Oh, please be a Russian. Please be a Russian. Dmitria,
no,
are you there?
Greek. Hi, John. How are you?
Good. You're on the air.
Okay, great. I just wanted to let you know that not everyone would accept these type of offers because I've been watching MSNBC, and they did bring out the fact that when Al Gore was running for president against Bush, he was also, Al Gore was offered personal, you know, I think personal diary or something from Bush's.
He was offered the debate books. He was offered the questions for the debate and turned them over to the FBI.
Right. So there you go. You know, you can't just assume that they're, you know, that people would do something this unethical. So I just wanted to, you know, remind you about that. Obviously, you already know. So that's it, basically.
No, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I only knew that because somebody brought it up earlier in the show this week. I had completely forgotten that. I wonder if Al Gore, and I'm sure Al Gore knows that it was right to take the high road to turn the debate books over to the FBI rather than pour through them, memorize the questions, and then hit the answers out of the park. I don't remember how he did on that debate anyway, but I don't think he could have controlled what really killed Gore in the debates, and that was this. That's what killed Al Gore in the debates. It was that... I can't believe I have to share the stage with this guy. I know the answers better. He did know the answers better. Gore was a wonk. He was well informed. He had no stage presence. I don't remember Bush's stage presence. I remember how killing Gore's was. I don't think anything in the book said, don't do this. Oh, and he did. Dmitry, thanks for your call. More calls in a minute. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Don't want to brag, but we're hooked up. I thought, well, I wonder what that clip was. So in my Google search bar, I just typed in CBS space news. CBS space news. You might try this now. In a browser, just type in CBS, skip a space, and type news. And it directs you to a website that seeks to expose the liberal media bias in the main networks and is nothing but critical of NBC, ABC, CNN, and certainly CBS. I don't know how they didn't protect that or how that algorithm works, but if you just open up a browser, this is what happened last night, and type in CBS space news, it takes you to a place that is nothing but critical of CBS News. But I digress.
Are you sure you did that?
Why are you saying that?
Well, I don't...
You doing that now?
Yeah.
See? What do you get when you do that?
CBS News and then...
Wait, a search for CBS News takes you to CBS News?
I know, go figure.
Hold on, let me open up a browser, John.
Right.
I can do this now as I'm wired for the internet.
Did you spell CBS correctly?
Not going to respond to that.
You just did.
See here.
Hold I on. Mean, I didn't mean to call. I don't.
No, it's okay. Just shut down the show.
it's twice this week. Good for me.
Okay, darn. A different thing is happening now. So it's not doing what I thought it would do. Okay.
But anyway, it did last night.
That's the end of the story.
Right.
But the point was that
if you paid full price for your internet, you'd get the whole thing.
I had one bar. So the other thing that sort of the point this site was making, it was an aggregator of mainstream media, and it said that as much as we're talking about DJ Jr. or DT Jr., we're not talking enough about the Ukraine-Clinton connection or Bill Clinton walking onto the tarmac and meeting, who was the attorney general at the
Loretta
time?
Lynch.
Loretta Lynch.
Yeah.
LL, as we like to call her. Let's talk to Tom. You're on WGN. Tom, what did you want to say? Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how are we doing? Good show. I was a Bernie supporter, but I think it's interesting. During the campaign, Trump must have said it two or three times about how he's going to build up the military. Number two, lessen our need for other countries from oil. And we did get oil from Russia. So I'm sort of thinking, why would Putin want him in office? In other words, to the point of how Russia was involved with helping him get elected. I would think Putin wouldn't want Trump in based on those two facts, which they are facts because he said it through the campaign.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's been the president's defense, too. Yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate your bringing that out because the president said as much. And I found myself wondering that, too, which is a real valuable use of your free time. Who would Vladimir Putin have rather had win the 2016 U.S. presidential election?
Ask it a different way. Who would he have rather not had win?
And what's your answer to that?
I think Hillary Clinton would be a tougher adversary, maybe, than even though, take that energy stuff aside.
Well, that's the question.
Donald Trump might be easier to influence. He certainly wasn't as experienced.
Well, we all know how the Clintons felt about Vladimir Putin and how the Obama administration felt about Vladimir Putin. And so if Hillary's an extension of that, you think Vladimir would not like that per se?
Well, there was reporting that he couldn't stand her, that, you know, that he was out to get her more than he was out to help him. She instituted a lot of those sanctions, or, you know, was Secretary of State at the time.
Sure. Well, Trump's position was that Hillary said she would dismantle the military. That's right. You and I would have to carry guns and fend off China. She would dismantle the military, and there was something else she was going to do to make us weaker, and therefore
it was windmills. No, I'm not kidding. That's what he said.
It was energy. It was an energy policy.
Yes, she loved windmills.
And so therefore, Putin wants Hillary to win because we'll be windmill power, and we'll all be carrying paper swords fighting the Chinese. So that was – so Putin wants that. I don't know who Vladimir Putin wanted. All evidence seems to suggest that he wanted Hillary to lose and Trump to win, but, you know, I don't read these minds. Here's some texts. They have just poured in. John, I think most politicians would think it's a setup and they wouldn't take the meeting. They did not Google this lady before they took the meeting with her. John, not a meeting from a Russian acquaintance, but from anyone else, yes. So when the president says, would you take that meeting? Yeah, but not from a Russian quote-unquote acquaintance. John, I can't believe other politicians would want dirt on other politicians. Thank you, 847. And from 773, seriously, John, come on, man. Most politicians would be smart enough to question the invitation and even involve appropriate authorities such as the FBI. They have no idea what they are doing. Joy wanted to say something. You're on standby. Joy's on line 4. Hi, Joy. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. You just mentioned Loretta Lynch, and aside from the impropriety, as I guess you could call it, or I don't know, it was illegal for Bill Clinton to get on that plane with her and have that conversation, whatever it was. My other question having to do with that is, regardless of all that, they're real big on, oh, save the environment, yada, yada, yada. Was she on the plane by herself? Was she one of the people who flies around on her own private plane while we're all supposed to be saving the environment and preventing, you know, global warming? Because I don't know that there was anybody else in on their conversation there. So just something to think about.
Thank you for the call, Joy. I remember when they had the Paris Climate Accord and everybody said all these world leaders flying in, putting fumes in the air to then have the big peace conference.
Well, it's worse for Loretta Lynch because she's actually a pilot. Okay. So she was the only one on that jet.
You're just making that part up.
I'm making all of it up.
But I think, look, nothing illegal happened when President Clinton...
But it was very consequential.
It was really bad.
Because it was dumb.
It was beyond dumb.
It resulted in her recusing herself and then that James Comey news conference, you know, where he decided not to press charges and said all those things about her.
Think about that.
So there was a real, it was a very consequential mistake on their behalf.
When they tell this story, what will be the first domino? Bill Clinton's innocent stroll across the tarmac. Hey, we just want to talk about our grandkids. That's all. I swear to God, we're just talking about our grandkids. Or was it Wiener's phone? And remember the sort of pivotal role that played in the Hillary Clinton thing, which begat a lot of other things. I mean, I'm looking for something really off in the weeds there, but
you're looking for the moment.
Yeah, I kind of am.
Yeah, I think the moment was when they reopened the investigation
into Comey opening up the Hillary Clinton thing.
Right.
What, 7, 8, 9 days before the election?
Was it that short?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it was close. Yeah, might have been. And had that not happened, I think there might be a different result.
By the way, Steve, you were not able to participate in the Mincing Rascals podcast.
Yeah, how was it?
We'll post that a little later on today. It was less for your absence.
Oh, please.
We miss you. One of the things we talked about, and you'll be able to listen to later today, and perhaps here on our Saturday broadcast of the podcast, is the idea that they would reconstruct Lakeshore Drive. Do you like that idea or not? Lakeshore Drive north of Navy Pier.
Well, they want to create more park space, right? So I don't know. I kind of like the idea of driving right along the lakefront, but...
I'm with you. I don't want them to change it. I do want them to change it if we have a balanced budget, no debt, the pension crisis is over, and we got $1 billion laying around, don't know what to do with.
Man, you got to dream big. You got to do big things. So I'm kind of... I'm not against it if you are, but...
Speaking of...
No, I mean, you said I'm on your side here. I'm not completely there yet because I like the idea of driving by, but, you know, you got to keep doing things, too.
Evolving, you mean?
Yeah, make changes.
Speaking of big things, so the world's largest radio flyer wagon is right behind me. It's next to a very large Abraham Lincoln and the world's largest dweeb man who are, for some reason, taking up residence on Michigan Avenue. It's a kind of interesting statue. There's Abraham Lincoln with the Emancipation Proclamation showing a guy who I don't think you would let drive your kids in a carpool. The way he's got his hand gestured forward. But next to them now, on this, the 100th anniversary of this Chicago-based company, is the world's largest red wagon. The president of Radio Flyer is in our studio. Robert Passan is here. He's the CEO, actually, and chief wagon officer. You just made that last part up, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Wagon officer. I guess, you know, if you're in the business of making wagons, you get to make up titles, too. Chief wagon officer.
We do. We're all about fun.
Yeah. Congratulations to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. We're just really delighted to be here. We're down here today celebrating our 100th anniversary, and we wanted to have a birthday party here on Michigan Avenue to thank Chicago for 100 years.
Still based in Chicago?
We are, yeah.
Grand Avenue?
We're on Grand Avenue. We're 6500 West Grand. We're in the same building we've been in since the 30s. And today we do a lot of product development and design work in the space. We've won a lot of awards for being a great place to work. We have a really creative team who's coming out with all kinds of new products.
What kind of new products are you guys coming out with? You make wagons.
We do. We make wagons, and we still make that original little red wagon that everybody loves and knows so well. But in wagons, for example, now we have a wagon that folds up. That's very convenient. You can put it in your car. We also have wagons that have canopies, cup holders, seat belts, storage compartments. And we do tricycles, scooters, really anything the kids can ride on.
The one with the all-terrain wheels,
yes.
Great big wheels, looks like it's a four-wheeler.
Yeah.
When those things came out, how long have those been out?
Those have been out for a little over 10 years.
And yeah.
We got the idea from consumers who we saw were actually taking our wagons and kind of retrofitting them with big tires that they would buy. And so we came out with them, and they've been a really huge hit.
My kids were in their middle teens when those came out, and maybe one was about 15, maybe one was about 10. I thought, oh, I want one of those wagons.
Yes.
I wish that they had come out 40 years earlier or 5 years earlier, 15 years earlier.
Yes.
They look like fun.
They are. They're really fun. And you can even go on our website now and customize your own wagon. You can pick the body type. You can pick the tires. You can accessorize it. You can even put your family name on it.
Like many Americans, I have an arthritic hunchback wiener dog. Do you have anything that would be good for me to pull my wiener dog around in?
We do. I mean, one of the things about Radio Flyer is we get all these photos and stories from people, and they're always these heartwarming stories about childhood, but we also get all these pet photos where people are using our wagons for dogs and pets, just like you described.
Do people sort of have an almost evolutionary relationship with their wagon? I bought it for my son, and then we played with it, and he played with it, and then it became a farm tool or a garden tool, you know what I mean?
Yes, taking out the recycling, using it around the house, hauling drinks around for a block party. Those are all things that we hear a lot of. And a lot of times people say, I've gotten rid of all my kids' stuff. I just can't get rid of that wagon. And I think it's because it holds a special place in their hearts.
When was it my first son was born or second born? We got a great big teddy bear and put it in our first Radio Flyer wagon. And Boy, we had that a long time if we don't still have that. Mm-hmm. Talk about an emotional attachment.
Yes. Yeah, and it's all about memories and memories of being with people you love and having fun.
How about wagons with pop-up bars where you could, and maybe this is getting a little too far from the family, you know, kid-centric product that you've got.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but we know that. Well, we don't discriminate against what people use their wagons for. We like people to use their imagination. So as long as people are being safe, and that's great.
I won't ask. So then how many people work for Radio Flyer?
We've got about 75 people here, and we call them flyers.
How many wagons do you guys make?
That's a trade secret, but we've made about 100 million wagons through the years.
What percentage of them are still made in the United States?
About a third of our products are made in the U.S., and now, while wagons are still a really important part of our business, it's less than a third of our sales, so we've really grown by coming out with other products like tricycles and scooters, and we even have a partnership now with Tesla where we're doing the Model S for kids. It's this amazing, awesome battery-operated car.
That is a good idea.
It's been great.
Oh, wait, battery-powered?
It's battery-powered,
oh,
yes.
How do you feel about that? I mean, I don't know. Maybe people want to be self-propelled or pull, not electric-powered. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and we have that, too. We have things that kids can ride. We have things that kids can pedal, but we also have battery-operated stuff, too.
Strangely, we're getting calls. So if you want to join us in conversation, 312-981-7200. Do you have a minute to take a couple calls?
Sure.
We'll start with Ralph. You're on WGN. Hey, Ralph, you're on the air.
Hi. Just thought I'd like to share with you the fact that I gave my wife a Radio Flyer wagon is a 52nd birthday present. Let's suffice it to say that it was more than a few years ago. And she has told me that it was the best gift she ever got, because when she was a little kid, she always wanted one, and they never gave her one. And I guess I did the right thing buying her a Radio Flyer wagon.
Why didn't they get her one? Because she was a girl?
No, just because it was something that they couldn't afford at the time, and it was not in their priorities list.
Isn't that funny? Do you hear stories like that sometimes?
We do, and we love stories like that. I mean, that's why.
Thank you, Ralph. What a great call. Thank you, sir.
That's why
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's why we do what we do. I mean, the stories and what it means to people is just what makes our work meaningful.
I suppose so, really. I mean, you know, whatever you make as a company, whatever service you provide, ultimately you hope it's providing value to people.
Mm-hmm.
And what a neat sort of utility, but also, you know, entertainment thing that you guys created.
Yeah, one of the things we hear now that's really interesting, too, is from millennials. Millennials are looking more for experiences in some cases than products. And what we hear from them is that they love Radio Flyer because it is a product, but it actually is a vehicle for experiences and for kids playing outside and using their imagination.
Why is it called? I've always wondered, why is it radio? I used to think it was radial, you know, as in tires. Why is it radio?
We get that question a lot. In the late 20s, radio and flight were the two high-tech inventions, and my grandpa, who started the company, thought they were two really cool words. They had nothing to do with the product, but he put them on the side of the wagon, and they stuck.
So this is a family-owned and operated company?
It is,
yes. Is it publicly traded?
No.
Want to go public?
No, we don't. We really like the ability to be able to stay focused on the long term and just create wonderful products that people love.
What's your background, then?
Well, I really grew up in the business. I went to business school at Northwestern, but really where I learned the business was from my dad.
What's the biggest challenge running kind of an old nuts and bolts kind of corporation these days?
Well, I think we have there's always this inherent tension between the nostalgic part of our brand. It's a very nostalgic brand, and also making sure that we're staying current and relevant. And so we're always kind of navigating that tension. And I think when we get the products right, like the folding wagon or like the tricycles we've done, where it makes sense with the brand, but it's also current and relevant to families today.
Okay, you need to get a drone mechanism on top of a wagon, and you can fly the wagon to someplace.
I love it.
No, you don't. It's funny because when I think of these iconic American companies that I root for, like Harley-Davidson or Sears Roebuck or Converse, I put Radio Flyer in that same category. I think a lot of people do.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
And I would imagine then that your company is probably has as much longevity as almost any still running American company, 100 consecutive years. Have you calculated that? Do you know where you are in the pantheon of American corporations?
I don't know that, but I do know that the odds are really stacked against a company lasting for 100 years, whether it's a privately held company or a public company. It's just very rare to be around for really even more than 30 or 40 years.
Listener is asking what the name Flyer means, but I think you just answered that. So it's radio and flyer were just two buzzwords.
Yes.
If you guys came out today, it might be digital. I don't know. It would have been something else.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The digi thing. Boy, this is harder than I thought. It's 149. More calls in just a minute. And why is this man here? It's the 100th anniversary of Radio Flyer. The Chicago-based company has the world's largest wagon just outside our showcase studio window. Robert Passon is passing through the WGN studio. We could do commercials for you guys. You should be advertising on WGN.
I know. It makes perfect sense. Radio Flyer on the radio.
Hello. We could even give some away as prizes. We could say, and congratulations, Lois. We're going to send you a Radio Flyer wagon, and then she'd be thrilled. Oh, I've always wanted the wagon. I got the thing. That'd be great value for you.
Yes.
I'll have my salespeople talking to you. Really, how do you promote? How do you advertise? I mean, everybody's kind of figuring that out these days. Mm-hmm. How do you guys do it? Word of mouth or what?
Yeah, word of mouth is the most powerful for our category.
That's what we are, word of mouth.
Yes. Yes, I mean, really, it's the product is the main vehicle of advertising. And it's really interesting because we've really done very little advertising in our 100-year history, but our brand is so well-known because our products have been around for so long.
I know your color. I know the white lettering. I know Radio Flyer. I don't know your logo. Do you have a slogan that you use?
We don't typically. This year it's Time Flies, Enjoy the Ride is our 100th anniversary tagline, but we don't have a tagline beyond that.
Let's pick up a couple more phone lines. Elaine, you're on WGN. Hi, Elaine, you're on the air. Our guest is Robert Passon. He's the CEO and Chief Wagon Officer at Chicago's Radio Flyer. What did you say, Elaine?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Was wondering if they do any refurbishing of Radio Flyer wagons. I have my son's wagon that's about 35 years old and could use a makeover.
What a great question. I was just telling him off the air, Elaine, I have one that's over 20 years old for my son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we provide parts and we provide logos when people are doing their restoration. And that's actually part of kind of one of our ways that we try to be environmentally sustainable is by reusing the products. But we don't actually refurbish them for people.
You don't?
We do not.
Boy, you should do that. Is there somebody in town that does that? I mean, you can get bicycles redone, cars redone, appliances redone. You keep listening, Elaine. If somebody's in that business, I'll put them on the radio, okay?
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah. A couple of you are wondering how long the world's largest wagon. The tires on it are...
Yeah, the wheels are 8 feet in diameter. It weighs 15,000 pounds, and it's about 27 feet tall to the top of the handle.
If you want to get your picture taken with or around it, it's going to be out there until 3, is that right? Or like, you guys going to start take that thing down at 3 o'clock? How long can people come down, would you say? What's a guess? Oh, really? It'll be there through much of the afternoon? But we'll advertise. It's 1:54. Hurry up. Get downtown. It's not going to be here all night.
Yeah, it's being taken out this evening.
Okay, there you go. Let's talk to Ed. You're on WGN. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi there. I'm an 80-year-old amputee in a wheelchair, and I'm wondering if I could get a Red Flyer wheelchair with wheels that are close enough that I can get up closer to my kitchen counters and things. Because my regular wheelchair, the wheels always keep me from getting close.
There you go, more product development. Hold on a second, Ed. Let's see what the boss says.
We'll share that idea with our product development team. We don't have any of those right now, though.
Everybody, I mean, it could be endless, the applications and design opportunities. And then you got to think, is it commercially viable?
Yes.
Have you had any fails? Did you guys do some things you went, wow, that one didn't work?
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of product failures. I mean, anytime in consumer products, there's a high percentage of failure. Years ago, we tried a doll in a wagon. We were selling this little wagon that we were selling a lot of, and we thought we saw people putting dolls in it, so we thought we could do our own doll. We learned we don't really know anything about dolls.
Yeah. It's tempting, though, isn't it? But you kind of need to stay true to your core, don't you?
We have stayed very focused, and that's why we're really focused on anything with wheels for kids.
Janice, you're on WGN. Hi, Janice. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just in the car, and I heard your show, and it just brought back a lot of fond memories. My last name is Jan Bordignon, and my father-in-law was Antonio Bordignon, who I believe was a good friend of your grandfather. And Franklin Park Plumbing did a lot of work, and I think most all the plumbing work that needed to be done in the building at your office on Grand Avenue, as my husband, Tony, his son, also took over. And I remember riding with him over there for different work that needed to be done that he had to give estimates on.
I think this is the sort of thing. I'm out of time. It's nice of you to call in, Janice.
Okay. I just wanted to share that.
You
had
betcha.
A lot of good memories.
Well, thank you. And that's the value of being in the same place for 100 years.
Yeah, I mean, I remember at my grandpa's funeral, my grandpa who founded the company in 1990, so many people told me stories like that. And one of the things they always said was that your grandpa was such a wonderful man. He was this immigrant who came from Italy with nothing, and he built this business, and he had this wonderful smile, and he was a man of his word. We never had to sign a contract. It was a handshake agreement.
Yeah.
And that's really how he taught my dad to conduct business and how my dad taught me.
I don't mean to be disrespectful, but at the funeral, did they pull him out in a red wagon?
No, they didn't.
Kind of an idea.
Yeah, maybe that's what we'll do for me.
Well, hopefully no time soon. It's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Sales will be calling you. That's Robert Passan. He is the CEO, right? CEO?
Yeah, we say CWO because Chief Wagon Officer.
It's 1:57, and this is WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hold on. Texting Mark Carmen right now. I said, hey, call in.
Lord have mercy.
It's 2:09. This is WGN. I'm John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We'll be here until 3, or whenever the show crashes and burns. That would have been about 2 minutes ago.
It was a big trade.
Keeping score at home.
I didn't mean to be defensive, but this, if this turns it around... Remember Sutcliffe came in? He didn't lose the rest of the year?
I know that, but I thought that Quintana's record was better than that.
Oh, okay.
I just texted Mark Carmen, just was texting me, and I'm like, dude, don't be on my phone. Be on my show. So maybe Carmel will call in here in just a second. Is that Mr. Carmen on line 7 by any chance? Elif's looking at me like, why is Carmen here? He's not scheduled.
He's always calling, trying.
All right. Hey, Carmen, it's John. You're on the air. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Earlier this week, you said it was a 49% probability that the Cubs will be in the playoffs. 2 days later, they get this Quintana from the White Sox. How does that change your estimate of the Cubs this year?
John, there's these really smart people out there that they do this thing called war wins above replacement player, and they have all these very technical things on what a player is worth. And Jose Quintana is worth supposedly one win for the Chicago Cubs. And I do believe that one win will be the key win and they will make the playoffs. I am altering up to a 56% probability if the Cubs come back
49
from 5.5 down and get in.
Wait a minute. What are you saying? That he's worth only one more win than had they stayed pat?
That's what the baseball nerds are telling us. One win. That one win could be the win, though, that puts them over the top.
Yeah, now you're being silly. But, I mean, really, skip that statistic because that doesn't seem to help me here. This guy's a good pitcher, right? And he'd probably have more wins if he had a better team behind him. Do you think this is really going to help the Cubs?
I think it's – listen, I'm a love prospects guy, John, and I always want to play for the future, and it's scary to go all in.
But the Cubs needed pitching. They needed it extremely badly. Jose Quintana is a very good pitcher. He's in control, including this season.
Now, hold on a second, Carmen. Now you're cutting out. How about this? See if you can answer this question, Mark Carmen, while I just pause for a second, and that is, who does he replace? He'll be a starting pitcher, so who will not be a starting pitcher?
Mike Montgomery will go to the bullpen, John. How's this sound? Am I better?
Yep.
Okay, Mike Montgomery will most likely go to the bullpen. You do have another situation, though, with John Lackey, who's on the disabled list. I don't know if he's ready to come off. I think he is. He's got plantar fasciitis. So if Lackey is ready, he'll be back in the rotation, and Montgomery will go to the pen. If he's not, then Montgomery will stay, and Lackey will be on the DL. Listen, this guy is mid-3 ERA, John. He is an incredible competitor. Everybody loves him, and he's cheap. So it gives the Cubs flexibility to spend on other needs. And they had to pay up a ton, but they didn't have to pay up off their World Series roster. No Kyle Schwarbers or anything like that were involved in the deal. The Cubs wanted to get Chris Sale from the White Sox. The White Sox asked for Chris Bryant. So,
Well, that was a funny thing. That ain't going to fly, Jack.
That did not fly. So the Cubs didn't think that they were ever in the mix for Quintana since they were starting with Bryant for Sale. But they wanted Dylan Cease and they wanted Eloy Jimenez. And the Cubs were willing to do that to get a guy that's going to pitch for them for 3.5 years. And if it goes awry, by the way, you know, if things go terribly, they have a guy that they can trade in Quintana. That's obviously not the plan. So I think it's a very fair trade for the Cubs, and I think it's a great deal for the Sox, too.
Mark Carmen, for those of you that will be asked at home, hey, what did Mark Carmen say about the Cubs' chances now? They've moved up 7 points from 49 to 56% being in the playoffs.
In the Carmen rankings, yes, that's correct. Those are unscientific.
All right. I'm done with you for now, but I'll call you again. Thanks for your help, my friend.
Thanks, John.
It's Mark Carmen. We started the show talking about the video of Donald Trump's awkward handshake with the French First Lady. Enough about that, but as I was looking at strange videos today, I was sharing with Steve Bertrand. There's a story in the news, a woman in St. Martin at Maho Beach. I believe that's how you pronounce it, M-A-H-O. It's a famous beach in St. Martin where the runway butts up next to the shore. And there's a little fence and road in between the two, but that's about it. And as the planes come in, they go right over the beach. If you Google St. Martin, and you'll want to spell that with two A's, St. Martin, you will see a fantastic video of planes landing. But what people also like to do is when the planes are about to take off, they back up to the beach, literally me to you to the beach. And it's a 747. And, you know, they sit there, they park, and then they just all thrust forward. Shoom, and the backwash coming off of these jets is tremendous. And it blows people like paper dolls back into the beach and into the water.
You showed me a landing, and the landing did it, too. You sent me a video
of landing.
Yeah,
actually it does, yeah. Wait till you see them taking off. In fact, if you like me on Facebook, I'm King John on Facebook. King John on Facebook. We posted videos of each. We did not post the video of the woman that lost her life, but a woman waiting for the plane to take off, and then it does and knocks her back, was thrown back and got killed yesterday. She's 56 years old. The people that do this.
Would you ever do it?
No. I don't even want to watch you do this. Elif averted her eyes when I said watch this video because she thought it was going to be a death video. I'm like, no, but it's going to be awkward. But the little cement rail that these people stand on with the fence then coming out of it says on it, do not stand here, danger. And yet it's a perfect place for people to stand. And the planes come, they give them a haircut as they come over. It's stunning.
And then they roll backwards like a piece of paper in
yes,
the wind.
Absolutely, I mean, they do.
Head over heels, rolling backwards.
I've
never seen anything like it.
More people have not died doing this is amazing to me. Find me on Facebook. I'm King John. Otherwise, Google St. Martin, people getting blown around like paper dolls. The other video that was just stunning to watch to me this week. You know, the Narcan drug that they give people who have overdosed on opioids is controversial in that in some parts of the country where the crisis is particularly endemic, and last year, 60,000 people died from overdoses on heroin or related drugs. That doesn't sound like enough now, does it? But I don't know. That sounds like a big number at the same time. Anyway, in some communities, they don't want the paramedics or the librarians to have Narcan because they said it just prolongs the problem. There was a long New Yorker story a couple of weeks ago about how in West Virginia and places like that, you know, pretty much everybody's carrying some around because pretty much everybody is ODing or on the verge of it. And it's controversial because they think it now sends a signal to people. You can take these drugs, you can experiment with these drugs, and if you start to die, we'll save you with this other drug. There's the video of a woman who has been dead for about 5 minutes. Her lips are blue. She's on the gurney. She's being wheeled into the ambulance. They've been doing CPR on her, but there's no hope for her. And as she is wheeled in like a Frankenstein movie, she sits up from the waist. She just goes, whoa, and sits bolt upright. That was the Narcan kicking in. It's unbelievable that a drug like that exists and can be so effective. And yet some people find that quite controversial. It's 2:18. If you have been to that St. Martin Beach, by the way, I've got just a minute here. I'll take your call. Afterwards, the ABC Entertainment reporter talks to us about the Emmy nominations. Did you see who the number one Emmy nominee is this year? There's two that are tied.
As far as TV shows?
Yeah.
Was it Westworld?
And?
I did see, and I don't remember.
Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live.
I guess
they set a record, right?
Yeah, 22 nominations.
And for most ever as a show in history.
I guess they both got that then.
No. I mean, cumulative, over the years, nobody's got more,
I guess. So I'm a little surprised, but then again, I'm not. Saturday Night Live was so indispensable this past year.
And Westworld was so unwatchable.
That's the thing. I did not understand. I gave it a couple of episodes. I went, nah, it's not happening.
I think I watched all of it or all but one of them.
And you still weren't happy.
No.
How does that happen? John, you're on WGN. Have you been to St. Martin?
Yes, I have.
What happened, man?
Well, we were there about 5 years ago on a cruise, and we got off an excursion, and just off from this fence that blocks off the public from the landing strip and the takeoff strip, they have a road that runs parallel to that chain-link fence. And a week prior to us going there, there was a lady driving a van, which is about 15 feet. The road is about 15 feet from the fence, and it rolled the van into the ocean.
I totally believe that. That's stunning. How, you know, I guess that's the difference between the United States and the rest of the world. The rest of the world goes, we'll make more vans. C'est la vie.
Well, and the local kids hang in the chain link fence, and it literally blows them straight out like a flag. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. I mean, literally, they get launched into the ocean, some of these kids, and the ones that survive dust themselves off, say, wasn't that fun? Let's do it again. But
it's deadly
dangerous. It's just appalling.
Definitely.
Yeah, what a crazy time. Hey, thanks.
Well, I just thought I'd share that with you.
You betcha, John. Thanks for the call. I'm King John on the Facebook. You can find details there. I believe that, is that pinned to the top now? Is that on the top or is the Trump bracket battle on the top?
The bracket battle is still at the top.
All right, maybe we'll unpin that because we are about to begin the Trump bracket games. And that'll be, you know, Covfefe versus the Time Magazine controversy. It's the wackiest Trump moments. We keep meaning to put it up, but then each week the field changes. There's a new entrant into the competition. So we'll just have to cut it off here pretty quick and get going.
Do you know about his friend Jim in Paris?
Donald Trump's friend?
Yeah, I don't really know much. I've been reading about it. I've not heard this before.
No.
But apparently he would keep making references to, I've got a friend Jim. My friend Jim is a business leader. My friend Jim, who won't go to Paris because it's just not safe and the Islamic terrorism and all that stuff. You've not heard that?
I have not.
Yeah,
I mean,
I haven't either, but they're making a deal of it today.
And so have they found Jim?
No, I don't think he exists, kind of. But so that's kind of the wacky moment. The president is in Paris, and they're asking him about his friend Jim.
Why won't Jim come here?
Yeah.
We will give free tickets to the Eiffel Tower to your friend Jim.
And the president said, well, I feel perfectly safe here. You have a very good president, strong president, and all of that. But
yada, yada, yada. The president then said, I will have my PR person, John Miller, reach out to Jim, and we will connect you. And now, live. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. I appreciate your tuning in. It's hard not to talk like that when you're listening to this music in the background. Sorry. Emmy nominees are out. Westworld and Saturday Night Live are the top nominee getters. Joining us to talk a little bit about it is Jason Nathanson, ABC News entertainment reporter. Hey, Jason, thanks for giving us a couple of your minutes. How are you this afternoon?
Hello.
We're all going to start doing that now. What's the headline for you? What's the big surprise in this year's nominees?
A couple of them. First of all, the fact that the Emmys, which notoriously likes to just keep passing along the nominations from last year, rolling them over and over again. In the drama category, they nominated 5 first-year shows. That's just absolutely insane. So we have Westworld from HBO, which is tied for the top nominee with 22 nominations. We have The Crown and Stranger Things from Netflix. We have The Handmaid's Tale from Hulu, which is the first time Hulu has ever gotten a nominee in the best drama category. And then we also have This Is Us from NBC. That's the lone network representation there. After years of the networks never really getting anything in there at all, I think The Good Wife a couple of years ago was the last network show to get a nomination.
Wow. Boy, what does that say, huh?
Well, I mean, that's been the case for a long time. And it's not really fair because a show like Westworld or The Crown, they do like 10 episodes, maybe 13 episodes at the most. A network show has to usually do 22 episodes. So, I mean, the quality is just going to vary when you only have to do, you know, a couple. And that's been the case now for quite a while.
Well, do more people watch The Good Wife than watch The Crown, though? I mean, if you were going to say, yeah, but what has more viewers? Network shows would beat the Hulus of the world, wouldn't they?
Great question. We have no idea, especially when it comes to The Crown. Netflix doesn't release the numbers, so we have no idea how many people watched The Crown. We have no idea how many people watched Stranger Things. So we have a representation when it comes to The Good Wife. And usually, yes, more shows that are on a network, they have a wider base. They have wider distribution, so it's possible that more people watch. So you kind of got to judge by buzz and things like that. You know, a lot of people talk about Stranger Things or The Crown, but that doesn't really channel into numbers when you talk about buzz. So, you know, it's really kind of up in the air.
Well, what should win? What's the criteria? Highest quality, most popular, most viewers? I guess it's subjective, but I mean, what should win?
It's completely subjective. In the drama series category, last year Game of Thrones was the winner. And won the most Emmys and had the most nominations. It's not eligible this year, so that leaves the field wide open. So a case could be made for any of the shows, and most of the shows are very, very strong. I'd make a few kind of changes, just myself, but Better Call Saul from AMC definitely deserves to be in there. The Crown is fantastic, deserves to be in there. Same with Handmaid's Tale. House of Cards, I don't know. You know, it's getting a little, I think it jumped the shark a while ago.
Thank you.
I think it's one of those shows that they keep kind of recycling, even though it maybe doesn't deserve it. I'd love to see in its place a show like The Americans, which did get nominated last year, did not get nominated this year. It's a fantastic show, much better in the kind of politics and espionage genre. And also a show like The Leftovers on HBO, which is fantastic and just wrapped up its third season. It's off the air now. It would have been nice to see it get some love there. Stranger Things they expanded the category to list or to include 7 shows. I think that they did that last year. And that's to get in a show like Stranger Things, which is a more popular show. I think a lot of people watch it. It's not, you know, a heady show or a hard-to-watch show like The Handmaid's Tale or something like that. So Stranger Things is maybe one of the more popular shows in this, so that could win for that. This Is Us, also on NBC, a very popular, very kind of tear-jerky show.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Westworld on HBO, which is a really dense, really confusing, hard to get into for a lot of people. But once you get into it, there is a payoff, and it is kind of worth it.
How about that? You know, maybe House of Cards suffers because House of Trump is actually a more bizarre, compelling show. I don't actually mean that to be silly. I wonder if it suffers by comparison, you know?
You know, it's possible, but it still got a nomination and still got in there, as did The Handmaid's Tale, which a lot of people say draw parallels to what's going on politically. And also Saturday Night Live, which is the most nominated show, or tied with Westworld for the most nominations, you know, spent a lot of the season talking about Trump, impersonating Trump and his cabinet. So, you know, people are consuming a lot of this stuff, which does kind of parallel what's going on in politics.
By the way, that The Crown, everybody does this. The show that they watch is the best show. I don't watch Handmaid's Tale, so it's probably not as good as the show I watch. I watch The Crown. But John Lithgow and The Crown, I just thought every episode, every moment, every scene was fantastic.
It absolutely, and I would agree with you there. The Crown is a fantastic show if you want to watch it. And that kind of takes last year Downton Abbey was eligible and, you know, went off the air. So The Crown maybe takes the Downton Abbey place this year. But it's fantastic. It's historical. And John Lithgow was great as Winston Churchill, who we will not see, I think, in the next season. The next season's going to deal with her relationship with JFK, so that'll be interesting to see. But a great show, and it won the Golden Globe for Best Drama, so it's possible. That's not really a predictor, but it's possible.
I'll just give you 60 seconds to give me your thoughts on outstanding comedy, outstanding drama there. Atlanta, Black-ish, Master of None, Modern Family, really? Silicon Valley, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Veep. What stands out there?
This is the category. This is the opposite of drama, where drama had a lot of new series. This only has one new series, and that's Atlanta. And Atlanta could actually win it. It is getting so much buzz. It won the Golden Globe. It won the Critics' Choice Award. It's possible that it could win. But you have a bunch of shows that are firing on all cylinders, Black-ish, some would say Master of None. And for my money, Veep is still the funniest show on TV. So yeah. I think it's possible that that could win.
Fair enough. Yeah. You like, promise me you like Silicon Valley or we can't be friends.
You know what? I like it. I don't think it deserves to be in this category.
Oh, no. Wow. Well, that wraps it up.
It's a good show. I don't think it's a great show.
Hey, Jason, you're terrific. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Sure thing. Take care.
We'll visit again. Jason Nathanson, former ABC News entertainment reporter, correspondent. Going to have that dealt with. Do you watch that show?
Nope. Can't do it.
Really?
Tried. Yeah, it's one of those.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You gave Silicon Valley a try. How many episodes did you watch?
I've watched a few episodes over
the
couple
years. That's fair
enough.
If it doesn't work after a couple, I don't think you have to spend any more time. You know, there's so much good stuff out there. Find your niche. But wow.
I want to see Atlanta.
I guess so.
I don't know
if
it's available on demand or not. I don't think it's on Netflix or Amazon yet.
God, it's so hard to know how to watch TV these days and what you're able to watch. That's the frustrating thing, too. You go, Master of None. Which one was that? How do I get that?
Am I paying for that? You should watch that.
I understand that, but I mean, you know what I mean? Not all of these shows are necessarily even available to everybody.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but on the Business Lunch, I want to talk to the people who write the two-sentence descriptions now for shows that you see online.
Why?
Because it's impossible. Really, they have to capture the show and convince an audience to watch it. I spent 15 minutes last night trying to find a series on Amazon or Netflix.
Yeah.
Then you just click and you see a picture and two sentences, click, you know, and to be able to capture it and market it, I don't know. It's very difficult to do. I can't find something. There's so much good to watch, I can't find anything.
After news, I will have the TV Guide description of this radio show. Hey, I know this song. Sing it home if you know
There's
the words.
No place I'd like to tell you about lives in my hometown. Lakeshore Drive, the road is called, and it'll take you up or down. From rats on up to riches, 15 minutes you can fly. Pretty blue lights along the way help you ride on by.
That song is a lie.
Lights shining with a heavenly grace.
You're not flying anywhere in 15 minutes on LSD. Actually, sometimes it's just fine, sometimes it's not. It's not just the cars on Lakeshore Drive that are the subject of the news today.
There ain't no road just like it anywhere I found. Running south on Lakeshore Drive, getting into town.
So many people use Lakeshore Drive these days. Cars, inner drive, outer drive, pedestrians, bicycles. Good Lord. And so they said, you know what we need to do is maybe even that thing out where it makes a hard left if you're going north and then another right around Oak Street Beach, sort of the reverse of the old S-curves. And then why don't we even that out? We'll move Oak Street Beach. We'll create a little more parking space and green space. And you look at the artist's rendition of this, and it's like, who wouldn't want that? It's fantastic. And it looks like they've even got more park space on that side of Michigan Avenue. So So, yeah, I'm in. But I didn't see in the article what it costs or what the timeline would be per se. And I don't know how you feel about it, too, because there's a part of me. You know, I'm so used to getting hit with the stick, I don't want you to stop. I kind of like the old left turn, right turn, bottleneck on Lakeshore Drive, going around Oak Street Beach. That's what we do here. I find myself almost nostalgic for something that's a pain in my ass every day. Well, that makes no sense, John.
Complaining about that, you should have seen the old S-curve.
Yeah, no, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't remember how bad that was.
Oh, it was not a curve at all. It was two right angle turns.
Yeah.
And you would turn four lanes at a time.
Yeah. Well, you're turning four now.
I know, but these were literally, I mean, they weren't curves at all. You know, now you kind of wind through that area.
Yeah, right.
You'd be driving straight, and then it'd be, as I recall, a 90-degree turn to the right and then a 90-degree turn to the left.
Are you surprised there aren't more accidents on Lakeshore Drive now where they have the Oak Street curve?
They say there are three a day.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know if right at that spot, but
no,
on Lakeshore
really?
Drive a
really?
Day, yeah.
Wow. All right, then, well, maybe we ought to fix that. But I'm still interested in the cost. So we reached out to somebody who knows a little bit about this. On a phone line is Jeff, and I believe it's Shriver. Jeff, is that how you pronounce your last name?
That's right.
Welcome to the show, Director of Transportation Planning and Programming for the Chicago Department of Transportation, CDOT.
Yes.
What about this, Jeff, this fixing the Lakeshore Drive? You've heard Steve and I talk a little bit about it. What do you want to say?
Sure. Well, I think you've got a lot of the issues that are involved. The drive and the park that it goes through and the lakefront trail that runs right beside it serve just a great variety of users. It's not just a major auto-oriented artery into and out of the city, but it's an incredibly important bus corridor. It serves as many customers riding in transit up and down that corridor as some of CTA and Metra's busiest rail lines. And then there's the traffic on the lakefront path, and bikes and pedestrians is kind of off the charts when it comes to urban trails. And so we've got to figure out a way to make this all work. And the road is 80 years old in most of it, and the newest sections up north of Foster Avenue are 50 years old, so we're ready for a complete reconstruction.
Is this a new problem? Has something lately happened that's moving this along, this idea?
Not particularly. It's just the road is really at the end of its life, and because it's kind of all there at the same time, there's an opportunity here where we can really kind of re-envision the way that the road works. But the challenge, as you just mentioned, is that the road is iconic, and we want to preserve the iconic nature of it and the iconic nature of the way that it interacts with the park. But at the same time, understand that, you know, it was built for the way the city was, you know, many, many decades ago and generations ago. And are there things that we can do to improve it to make it even more, you know, iconic and more special? And that may require some changes. And so we have this nostalgia for the way things have kind of always been. But yet perhaps we can, the goal would be to build a road that we can be nostalgic for in the future, that this is, you know, becomes an integral to Chicagoans' way of life.
Maybe we could put a Marshall Fields out there, too. Hand out Frango mints to everybody that comes through the toll. So
I'm sure there'd be some in favor of that.
I get that. And, you know, so that's what you're up against. But how long would it take and what would it cost if we did the vision of it that we saw in the papers today?
Well, so the vision that we saw in the papers today is just that. It's a very preliminary vision to, you know, drawings that are drawn up to elicit discussion. And we've got a feedback survey online, and there's more drawings on the Lakeshore Drive website online that we want people to continue to respond to, even if they weren't at yesterday evening's meeting. But the timeline for reaching a consensus on this vision, or the plan for how it will look and function in the future, is still several years away. We're looking to get our environmental reports completed in 2020, and that will set kind of the framework for how we want the drive to be in the future, based upon what, you know, all the public input that we've been getting.
Well, does it kind of bug you that you got this great idea? It's easy to get enthusiastic about something, and then they say, well, the environmental study will take 3 years. Oh, stop it.
Yeah, all these public meetings are part of the environmental process too. So it's meant to achieve a public consensus, and that's the business.
How long would it take to build, and what would it cost?
So the construction, once the plans are in place, is expected to proceed in phases. And this is very similar to how South Lakeshore Drive was done over the past 20 years, where the museum campus was kind of reconfigured a couple of decades ago, and then And then the mainline lanes down to Hyde Park were done, and then the extension more recently completed down by the South Works in South Chicago, and now we're still building new pedestrian and bicycle bridges over South Lakeshore Drive. So it's taken many years, but it's been done in small sort of digestible chunks, and North Lakeshore Drive won't be any different. So once we know the master plan, then we can figure out, are there dependencies here? Do we need to do this section before that other section, and then kind of prioritize that way, and then find the money that it takes to get it done piece by piece.
Mm-hmm. Still haven't answered the how much does it cost question.
Well, it's difficult to answer that at this stage because we're still kind of defining it with this public input. So
I'll bet it's going to cost $54 billion.
No, it won't be that much.
I bet it'll be $1.3 billion.
Well, low billions is probably a good frame, but order of magnitude. But we really, really won't know until we have really defined what we want the drive to look like, where we want the overpasses and underpasses to be, how we want the park to function, how we want the new the seawall and beaches to protect the drive from Lake Michigan and create new park space.
It looks like it's biting into Lake Michigan more. Will that happen, or would the shoreline stay the same?
No, well, especially in the southern section. So the Lakeshore Drive really has kind of three sections on the north side where you've got the section from, say, Navy Pier up to North Avenue Beach area, and where there's really not much seashore at all. It's kind of in many sections of sort of the concrete area right up against the water. And then as you get north towards Belmont Harbor, it's very kind of squeezed in next to the city. And then there's the bird sanctuary and the golf course and the harbor. And then as you get further north of Montrose, you're into more wide open space. So there's different issues and different opportunities in each of the sections. But down at that southern section, the plan is definitely to push the seawall further into Lake Michigan and shift the beaches out.
Wow.
And that creates the space that it takes to both protect the drive from the wave action that sometimes comes onto the drive now, but also create park space that we've been hearing from the community is very much needed down there. There's not much green when you get south of North Avenue, down to Navy Pier now.
That's very ambitious, but I mean, how much fun is that? Here's the other thing, though, that I think people like me would say. If somebody's got $1 billion laying around, how much of a priority is this compared to all the other problems the state has or the city has?
Well, so the transportation and the road building budgets are allocated by the state and by the federal government to each state on an annual basis. And so there are funds that come through as a matter of course based upon the tax structure that Congress and the state legislature sets up. So I think it's a matter of allocation, and these facilities need to be rebuilt anyway. So the goal is to rebuild them in the way that improves, we're not necessarily stuck in rebuilding it the way that it was built 80 years ago.
Right,
we can
re-envision
it, and so it needs to be rebuilt anyway, so there's an opportunity here.
I think they got to make it easier to get from Lakeshore Drive to the Skyway, too.
Well.
And I want you guys. Has this happened to you at cocktail parties? People go, oh, hey, Jeff, I got an idea. Make the road around and then they're telling you what to do, right?
Yeah, that's the nature of being a transportation planner. Everybody has their ideas.
Well, listen, good. I got to go, Jeff, but anything else that we should know or you want to sort of impress upon us about this idea?
Well, just encourage everyone who wasn't able to attend the meeting, and even those who were, to go onto the project's website, northlakeshoredrive.org, and read up on it. And there's a survey online that people can respond to, and then keep posted on that. We'll have plenty of additional meetings coming up in the next upcoming years. So more opportunity for input.
Northlakeshoredrive.org. I'm glad that we are trying to find a way to separate pedestrians from bicyclists. It's pretty near dangerous because not only do you have pedestrians, you have joggers, you have bicycle riders, and then you have Zoom bicycle drivers. You've got four different speeds, two different modes, sharing the same path sometime. I know you know all of this, but boy, if we had to fix something, I'd start there, man.
Yeah, that's absolutely part of the plans here. And then the Park District right now, to their credit, is already making some interim steps to improve that, and then our project will build on that.
When are they going to open up that little ramp that comes off of the inner drive or over the inner drive, over the outer drive, and onto the Ohio Street Beach area? You know what I'm talking about? There's this like bicycle ramp or something like that. It comes over the Lakeshore Drive near the base of Navy Pier.
The Passerelle Bridge up north of North Avenue. Yeah, right. That's having some repair work done to it now. And that actually, I don't know the schedule off the top of my head, but I believe it's within the next month or two that should open.
All right. Good luck to all of us. Hey, Jeff, I'm going to call you about every 6 weeks and give you a hard time, okay?
Sure. No problem.
We appreciate your time. Good luck to you all on this.
Well, thank you very much for publicizing it and getting the word out.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do. NorthLakeshoreDrive.org. If you're just going to, if you had a blank slate, what would you want to see change or happen? Here's another thing I always thought would be fun. You get this bicycle path, and then you have it go downhill, and then it hits a ramp that kind of goes up so that you could make a jump into the water. How much fun would it be to ride your bike, splash into the lake, and then you'd have to get out of the lake with your bike. But I just think that's always been something I thought would be fun. Or at least some sort of opportunity, because the concrete apron that runs along Lakeshore Drive and goes right up to the lake where there's not beach, it's just the water slapping up onto the concrete way there where you bike and ride, it's very inviting. You do really want to jump off and dive in or swim around there. But they've got all of these warnings saying, don't do that. You could die. And then people are swimming and doing it anyway. Since people want to do it and probably are going to do it, I would impress upon them to find a safe way for people to do that. Like make it so that the water that you dive into there is about, I don't know, 10 feet deep, like a swimming pool. And have a uniform sand base. Maybe 9 feet deep. I'm not going to worry about the details right now, but the point is make it so people could enjoy and use that. Don't tempt them and tease them, and then say you can't. When I get to be king, is it supposed to rain tonight? I should listen to this radio station. It's supposed to rain again tonight? Is that what meteorologist Anna DeVlantis is saying?
Well, I far be it for me to try to say that. We were talking to Skilling, though. He was saying that we had some rain a couple days in a row, and I could have sworn we were expecting some. But I didn't hear his latest forecast.
I could have sworn that's what he said.
Isn't that what he said?
Yeah, isn't the problem for those guys too, though? The Skilling, for instance, doing weather for how many thousand square miles, and some people will get poured, like the north suburbs and the western suburbs, and then other people don't get much at all.
Right.
And then, you idiot, you said it was going to rain. This is my defense for them.
It's interesting, too, because, even though the rain has stopped in a lot of those places, the water still rising.
Yeah.
And this is the issue we're dealing with, state of emergency in Lake County being declared.
And that's a big deal. I believe there's no rain in the forecast for the immediate Chicago area tonight.
You're looking at your phone right now,
aren't
you?
Yes, I am now. I'm just checking. I'm looking. I could find Tom. Tom, often I get the email from Tom.
Yeah,
during the day that tells us all what it is, but I have not received it from him yet.
Do all of his email begin, well, I'll tell you.
Golly. Yes. Yeah, they basically do. But he seems to have, he's got his work cut out for him this week because it's just been crazy.
Yeah.
Right? And it's very thin lines of these gigantic storms that have created all this trouble. And you're right, like the rivers north of us, it's trouble. And water flows downhill, Jen. I don't know if you're aware of this issue.
It's crazy. The pictures, though. Have you seen the people's backyards look like swimming pools? You've got these roads shut down.
There's a guy that netted a carp or a catfish or something on the street.
I saw it on WGN TV this morning. They were showing fish in the street.
And they're like, oh, isn't this cool? And I'm going, it's not cool. That's bad.
Cool would not be the word I would use to describe it.
It's like, oh, I'm screwed.
Horrifying, really. Better for me. And a carp, why? The carp just, the noble carp. It can never be stopped. It's everywhere.
If I'm
like
a carp,
rats.
I'm like, well, don't you think the carp must be confused? You go, wow, that's a fire hydrant. Okay, that wasn't there.
I think the carp is like the cockroach. It's just ready at any given time. It's
got
the rat, the carp, the cockroach. They're all like, they know. They were here before us. They're going to be here after us. They don't care.
They'll figure it out.
So. Other than weather, what are you guys doing on your fine program today?
Let's see. We have, spoke with Tom Perez earlier. He is the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. And we got his take on all of the news of the day. And basically, giving this a little away, what are you people going to do? You know?
Yeah, if they can't make hay now, then screw them. Then they have no hope.
Yes. So that's kind of that's where that goes. We got a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks convention for next weekend. We have we will talk to Mike Warner, who is executive director of Lake County Stormwater Management Commission, and that's the about all of this and again the carp and why is there a carp in my carburetor and is that an issue? And Skilling will join us as well.
Yes.
Let's all come your way. Oh, and News of Roos with Lauren Jiggetts. We love
this. Could
Lauren
be good.
Jiggetts.
This will be good.
Yep.